Hi, I'm Tim, the audio editor for the Rooted family of podcasts. Just a quick note here before the episode starts. You are indeed listening to the Rooted Parent podcast hosted by Cameron Cole and Anna Mead Harris. But you are in for a special treat today. Cameron and Anna wanted to let you know about another of Rooted's podcasts. It's full of insight into parenting, rearing children, and guiding them through anxiety and into the Christian adults God is calling them to be. So what you're about to hear is an interview with Liz Edrington on the podcast Ask Alice, hosted by licensed professional counselor Alice Chernock.
Welcome to Ask Alice, a podcast that explores the issues and challenges teenagers face on a daily basis. Hosted by Alice Chernock, a licensed professional counselor in Birmingham, Alabama. Ask Alice is part of the Rooted family of podcasts, which also includes the Rooted Conference podcast, the Rooted Parent podcast, the Rooted Youth Ministry podcast, and Thanos to Theos. Rooted is a ministry that is focused on advancing grace-filled, gospel-centered, Bible-saturated youth ministry. To learn more, visit rootedministry.com. Here's your host, Alice Chernock.
Good morning, my friends. Welcome back to another episode of Ask Alice. Y'all, I am so excited about this podcast because, well, on so many different levels, I mean, it's just going to be amazing. So we have today the incredible Liz Edrington. She is one of Rooted, who produces this podcast for us. She is one of our very, very first people on staff, and she has just been a friend and a family member to us for so many years. Liz is on staff with North Shore Fellowship in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and has spent so many years working with teenagers, college students, young adults, all of that. And she is a very personal expert on the topic of anxiety. She knows it firsthand. And so gratefully, she felt the Lord's calling to create a devotional book for teenagers on anxiety. And y'all, I mean, you know, I do this as a living. I see a lot of kids in my office, and I have been waiting for solid 25 years for this book to be written. And finally, we have this resource that every single parent, every teenager, and every counselor out there needs to have on their bookshelves, because it is absolutely phenomenal. So Liz's book is called Anxiety, Finding the Better Story. It's a 31-day devotional for teenagers. And seriously, y'all, it is rich. So Liz, thank you so much for coming on here today.
Sweet Alice, you're just the best hype woman. You want to follow me around the rest of my life?
Because Whatever. No, I'm serious. When I got a copy of this book, I was like, hallelujah. I mean, it is such a good book. So tell us about it. What prompted this for you?
Yeah, such a great question. You know, for years and years working with teenagers, we've had this conversation at Rooted. There are very few resources that are oriented towards speak the language of teenagers. We have to do a lot of translating. So to get to provide a resource and put it in the hands of the teenagers that I work with and who had a lot to do with putting it together, to get to ask the questions to my teenagers of, what would you want to see in here? What are you struggling with? What do you hear your peers talking about? It's just such a joy to really hopefully provide something that will actually help our students. And it certainly, anxiety is the buzzword, right? Like, yeah, I recently had my 16 teenagers, I see that high schoolers Sunday mornings do a thumbs up, middle thumb, or thumbs down of like, a rating scale for your peers. Do you think anxiety has gone up, stayed the same, or gone down over these last couple of years of the pandemic? And every single thumb was up, except one partially up, you know?
Oh.
It's just everywhere.
If you ask on another day, it would totally be all two thumbs up.
So true. Yeah, right. Toes and thumbs up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you're so right. I mean, I think that we have all seen such a rise in anxiety over the last few years. But for you personally, How did this come about in your life?
Yeah, you know, from early on in high school, I've always been an athlete, and soccer was my passion. So it was even more loaded for me than playing field hockey. Like a field hockey game I could go play, but My anxiety showed up, especially pre-test, especially with papers and writing, ironically. This book evoked quite a bit of anxiety from writing it.
Talk about like the Lord's sense of humor and pushing you out of your comfort zone. Huh?
Truly. Yes. Lots of asking for prayer for my anxiety devotional. Breathing through it as I'm writing the breathing exercises.
Irony. That's funny.
So much irony.
Sorry.
Yes.
Keep going.
Yeah. So in high school, I mean, and I carry my anxiety in my stomach, my somatization and the way my body carries it is through tension and nausea, even in my stomach. So every single soccer game, those 4 years, I'd be so frustrated all day feeling this tension. And then I couldn't eat less than 3 hours before a game because I would get so nauseous. Just the regular rhythm of nerves and stress, anxiety that I carried with me. So it was even early on something of what else is there except me saying, why can't I stop? This is frustrating. I wish I could stop this anxiety.
You know, it's interesting to me that you bring up the soccer analogy, because I feel like there have been so many literally soccer players in my office that I've worked with over the years who have dealt with that exact same thing. And so we've had to do all kinds of different coping skills and stress management and anxiety reducing activities for those specific soccer players. Super interesting that you say that. I mean, like, yes, there are definitely like, I'll have gymnasts who have sort of a block, you know, and they won't be able to throw a tuck anymore or do things that they're used to doing. And it's so rooted in anxiety. So I think it's very, very common. And maybe it's because teenagers, that's kind of, you know, typically sports tests, that's kind of their world. But I get that exactly where you're coming from.
Yes.
All right. So tell us about the book.
Yes. So this, I know it's very exciting. It's yellow, exciting. So it's my little canary book here. This book is about the love of God coming for us, is what I'd say, and for all parts of us, maybe most especially for our anxious parts. But the hope is that it will allow for kids, for teenagers, for college, for whoever reads this book, to see anxiety as an invitation to connection. So less so something to be fought or stopped or fixed, but it's more of an invitation to connection. So the whole arc of this book looks at how we've been designed for connection, connection to God, to ourselves, and to others, and how disconnection, so the way our brains are disintegrated, we are disconnected from our bodies, we are disconnected from the earth and from one another. Jesus is reconnecting us. That is the beauty of our Lord who walks with us, who is incarnate, is that he meets us at every step of our journey. In the past that we worry about and in the future of all the what ifs, he is the anchor for our anxious embodied souls. And his story helps us make sense of our anxiety. So that is really the overview, is our anxiety finds a secure home in the story of God. It finds meaning and comfort and hope in Christ.
Wow. Which is so good, because I think that, I mean, you and I can talk all day long about different coping skills, and those are good and necessary. Yes. Don't get me wrong. And we can go into those, you know, if we want to, but I also think just having a gospel-centered picture of anxiety is so rare to find in any kind of resource right now. And I think for me, at least, a lot of kids who are dealing with anxiety, I mean, like you said, it's that disconnection, it's a pulling apart. And so I think that for a lot of kids, anxiety is in one realm and God and spirituality and the Lord is in a totally different realm.
Well put.
A lot of kids don't see that the Lord is still with us in that anxiety. Can you speak to that a little bit more and how that kind of comes out in your book and how you're presenting that to, especially to an adolescent population?
Yes. You've got your finger on the pulse of what's happening, I think, in a big way. So I start this book with an introduction of what anxiety is, because I think putting words to and giving definition to what it is can be helpful, and what it's not. So it is an emotion, energy in motion, and it is not an enemy, actually. It's not something we have to avoid, something to be afraid of, something even to just fix. But again, it's that invitation to connection. So my hope, and so anyway, I start with the introduction, and then I actually do provide an anxiety toolkit. This was something I fought for to be in there, where there are very practical grounding tools that start someone off so that they know this is how I can use. God designed our bodies beautifully to settle and calm themselves using breath and senses. So there are three exercises I provide right off the bat. And one of them is a breathing exercise that then I pull through the whole book. So every day has a breathing invitation to breath, to breathe in and breathe out using some of the scripture that fits with the day's devotional. So the hope is this is not just a cognitive exercise. This is a way the Lord is meeting us in and through breath work, through these glorious bodies he gave us that are broken and messy, but that he loves and he is bringing healing to. There are practical skills. There are daily breathing exercises. And then there's that overarching story through this devotional where we know that in Jesus, we're actually offered so much more than just grounding exercises or and more than invitations to just believe in ourselves enough. We're offered the person of Jesus, who is our rest. So it's not just techniques or tactics, even though they're helpful. We're offered safety and security and belovedness and meaning in Christ, this God who meets us right where we are and walks with us in our anxiety. So that's my hope for students to learn. It isn't separate. This very, this place that feels hard and weak and scary and annoying, for me, it felt frustrating. That is the place we're seen and known and loved. That is where Christ meets us and he never leaves us. So I want to help them, like on every level, as embodied souls, learn your bodies are a beautiful tool God's given you to settle yourselves. Also, Christ meets you in these unique, beautiful ways through this journey.
And I think too, I mean, I think kind of coming full circle with what you're saying, I think that a lot of times our kids' approach to anxiety is, I just have to stop it. I just have to make it go away. And you and I both know that that's probably the absolute worst thing that you could do is say, okay, I've just got to get rid of it. Because we both know that anxiety feeds on anxiety.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, and so when I'm talking to little kids, especially a younger audience, you know, I'll use the analogy of when you're in kindergarten and you have a little paper cup and a tiny little seed, and you do a little plant project in kindergarten and you put the little soil in there and you put the seed in there, and then your whole job for a solid month is to water that plant and watch it grow and give it sunlight and that kind of thing. And that's what happens. Then the plant starts growing. But anxiety is the exact same thing. It starts as a teeny tiny little seed, but the more we water it and the more we pay attention to it and focus on it, the bigger and bigger and bigger it grows. And so I think that what we have to do, what I try to do, and I'm sure you do too, is help our kids see that anxiety is actually not something to fight against.
That's right.
But to befriend.
Yes.
And so I encourage my kids to actually make friends with your anxiety, because it's your body telling you something. It's a message that your body is telling you.
Yes. Very well put. And I like the idea of fighting it makes it bigger. I have this vision in my head of a man running after me, of like this scary person, my anxiety kind of coming for me. And the more I turn around and look at it, the less I can actually move forward.
Yeah.
So what am I running toward is the question, which would be the bigger, more beautiful story that this anxiety devotional is about. Like, what is actually good? What can we look toward that? I mean, the hope we have in Jesus and our the reality of his redemption of this world and of everything being made right. But it's okay for us to look back to check and see. We can look at our anxiety, right? We can orient to like, I know where that scary man is running from. It's okay.
Right.
So we're going to look at it, but instead of turning around and fighting it and having being run over by it, it'd be kind of looking back and orienting and then looking toward the purpose and belonging and meaning and beauty we have in this amazing God who meets us daily right where we are. That bigger picture, that bigger story that I think we're missing from, especially current context when kids are told, you know, you do you, live your truth. You have to come up with your own story. You have to live your felt reality, which changes all the time because our feelings shift and change. They matter. Yeah. But to give them an actual, true, beautiful, the story of our God coming for us through time and space and history in the person of Jesus, and say like, hey, there's this beautiful thing to explore. Yeah, you can look, we can look at our anxiety, we're going to, and there's a whole story that it fits within where God's at work in and through it and using it and redeeming it.
Not only that, but God created anxiety. This is a God-given thing that he has provided for us because anxiety teaches us something about our body. Now, what we have done is taken that God-given thing and twisted it and turned it into a system of disbelief, of fear, of worry, right? But I think that we have to understand and teach our kids that when they're feeling anxiety, there are very real reasons, God-given reasons, why they feel that. When we're anxious, our amygdala has just fired off oxygen, adrenaline, and hormones, which are there to help keep us safe or to help us fight or flight. That's where that comes from. And so this is a God-given sense of protection that he has created for us that has then turned into something that is way too much and way out of control and not used in the way that God has designed it to use. So let me ask you this then. How do you know when anxiety crosses the line between what's normal, just normal everyday worry compared to, okay, I need professional help. This is too much. My anxiety is overboard, especially for parents. How do parents know the difference?
This is such a great question. And obviously it's going to depend kid to kid. So some of it is just knowing your kid and their norm. Some kids are going to run higher octane. They're going to run a little more anxious and some are going to run a little less anxious. So when you see a change, that is noteworthy. What changes am I seeing? So normal teen worries, kids have tests. They've got nerves around friends or people they like, friendship complications around teachers, around college, very common, stressful stuff, right? When we've got a little more disordered worry, you might notice the level, the intensity, the duration ramping up, and the distress that your kid is voicing or showing, which could be physical. That might be they've got more stomach aches, more headaches, more tension in their back and neck. They might be picking or kind of pulling hair or chewing nails, something. Mm-hmm. You're watching a shift, noticing a shift and maybe asking them about it that seems like it is more distressing. And then your little flag is going up the flagpole of, you know, this might be getting closer to I need help outside just myself and my family because distress, duration of distress is ramping up.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I agree with you. And I would say too, that it's a frequency thing, you know? And so when you see it, you know, it is, again, this is a God-given emotion. You know, we know that anxiety actually in some ways helps us. It helps That's us right. to hyper-focus. You know, athletes, we talked about athletes. Athletes thrive on that adrenaline rush.
Yep, it's you ready to go.
Stronger. Exactly. Like yes. This is not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It's just taken out of context. So I totally agree with everything you said. And I would add to it just if our kids are staying in that fight or flight mode for too long and not able to downshift,
yes.
That would also be, I mean, do you think so too?
I think that's really well put. If you're just noticing them ramped up all the time, and then if their anxiety can't be connected to specific things, or if it's everything, you're getting more into that generalized anxiety where it's not just the tests or the papers, but this, they're afraid to go to youth group. They're afraid, they're just nervous to do everything right. or anything. Then it's so ramped up. So frequency is a great way to think about it.
Okay. Then let me ask you this too, because I think that there are a lot of kids out there that are driven by anxieties that are self-imposed. You know, there are a lot of kids out there who are naturally high achievers, more perfectionist tendencies, that
like
kind
this
of thing.
One. Yes.
Hi.
Hey. Speaking my language.
Exactly. So I wanted to talk to you about that. So what as a parent, what do we do with that when you do have a kid who's so just personally super intense and hard on themselves?
I just love that question. I think that's so helpful. One of the things that it makes me think of is when we don't want to treat our child like they can fully control their anxiety, which might be controversial, but that's going to evoke a sense that there's something wrong with me that I'm doing or not doing. So it's my fault. Just all of it's my fault. Now, is there some responsibility in some way, some agency we have? Absolutely. But for kid, one of the things I think that is most helpful, I have a couple of high schoolers in my head, just to acknowledge it, for a parent to see them in it and say, I see you, like, I hear what you're saying, instead of to minimize it or dismiss it with a, you shouldn't feel anxious, don't worry about it. To see them, you might take them to thinking about something else after you see them and validate them. But I think that instead of the like, let's just think about positive things. Let's just turn our mind to something else. That first step of, I see you, I hear what you're saying. That's really hard. You were talking about this last week. That's hard. Yeah. And then to shift to, how about we open up Liz's devotional? You know, how about we engage, move our bodies is especially what I think of.
Yeah.
Like, let's go for a walk. Let's throw the ball around. Let's do something that is physically engaging.
Well, and because to marry everything that we're saying, because when you're physically engaging, you're burning off that adrenaline, that oxygen, and that hormones, which is why once you're in the soccer game, you feel so much better because you're naturally getting rid of all of those extra neurotransmitters that the brain has just released. And so that's why, I mean, exactly what you're saying, love your breathing, because you know, when you're anxious, the carbon dioxide in your brain has increased, your oxygen has decreased. So breathing techniques like you do, you talk about in your book, are so powerful because we're reestablishing equilibrium in the bodies that God has created. God is so cool. Our bodies are so cool. Like, it's supposed to be like this.
Yes.
And so I just love, I love your book because it is, it's so practical, but it's spiritual too. And golly, it's just so fantastic. So
Thanks, that's so good.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. What about the kid who is anxious for other kids? Because I think that there are a lot of kids that I see who tend to take on other kids' stuff, you know? And I don't even necessarily mean, I mean, you know, we know that there are with social media and Snapchat and everything like that, it's very easy to get caught up in Discord. I don't know about you, but I see a lot of kids who are on Discord who tend to get wrapped up into other people's emotional stress and pain and scariness. How do you speak to the child who has a hard time separating what they're going through compared to what other kids are going through?
It's a really great question. Again, it's kind of know your kid, know your student. So my first thought is not to generalize, but to say, if you're noticing that, the like, tell me what it's like for you. So you are anxious for them. You're telling me their story. You're kind of, I think you've experienced this too, I'm sure, Alice, it's like almost like a compulsive kind of like sharing, talking, telling, like perseverating on someone else's story. Like this is, these are things that are going on. I'm really nervous about them. Well, I love that you're caring for your friend. Tell me what that's like for you. Like, how is this impacting you? There's a little bit of, we're pulled outside of ourselves. There's a way we're managing our anxiety by trying to manage the world, control the world, control the circumstances. We're back to what would it be like if you're, I'm going to kind of put it in a scenario, if your teenager came to you or you noticed that they're just kind of ramped up and like sitting at the table, chewing their nails, looking at Discord to like bring their eye contact to you if that's not too scary for them, which sometimes it is.
It
so you're
is,
just
kind
of with them, like bringing a Coke over to them or something to say like, hey, so I noticed, what do you notice about this? Like, I notice you're kind of chewing your nails. You seem really nervous. How do I engage them where they are? Invite them to embodied connection with me, which is just my voice, my eye contact, my like the Coke you offer. The how do we invite them to more really is my question. Then trying to even discern, like that's such a hard discerning of what's theirs, what's not. We want them to learn boundaries. Yes.
Yeah.
Let's teach our kids about boundaries, how they're not responsible for others' emotional experience. They are only responsible for what they experience and what they do with it. Yes. Let's teach that. And then the follow through is, what do you notice going on in yourself? What are you feeling? What's in your own body? And how do we address that? What, which we can address, we can't address how the other people are feeling, all this drama, what's going on, like learning, helping them learn what their yard is. What's your yard? What are your thoughts and feelings and experiences here? Cause you're looking out there and just your eyes are fixed on it and you're trying to work with it, which validate, like, because you love your friends. That's a,
beautiful
thing that you care.
Right. And you should.
But how do we invite them to the present moment?
I want to stop you for a sec because I want to, so Liz and I can see each other as we're interviewing, but you did a really good job when you just now. So for our listeners who cannot see us, you did a really good job. And I want to highlight what you just said, which was stay in your yard. And what you did, I don't know if you realized it, but you sort of created a fence with your hands just then about a backyard. So think about it, listeners, think about a backyard. And I think that that's the image that you're trying to convey of our kids can look over the fence and they can see other people's yards. And that's good. And we want that. But when it comes to our own anxieties and worries and circumstances in life, I love how you just said, stay in your yard, stay in your yard. I think it points to how Christ has given grace for our circumstances.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't have the grace to handle other people's circumstances. He's going to give them the grace to handle their own circumstances. But, and we may have the grace to walk beside them and to look into their yard and to speak over the fence, or, you know, throw a ball over the fence, or whatever that is. We have that connection with them, but we are still designed to stay in our yard. I love that picture.
I love, Alice, I love that you're highlighting this, because I would say these are blessed limits. They're blessed boundaries, that something I was really intentional with in this book to help us understand. Even it's grace for today. Thank God for 24-hour periods that we have. We get to trust Him with grace for tomorrow, which is something that has kind of transformed my life, to know, yes, God has gone before me. He's outside of time, but that He's going to give me with daily mercies, daily bread, new morning mercies. He provides what we need for today, which means the invitation to trust Him for my anxiety tomorrow, to trust Him for my suffering and my pain tomorrow. And that's a blessed limitation, those 24 hours. It's a little container. And our fences and our yards are another way that those containers come into play. And our needs are another way to think about blessed limits of we need to sleep, we need to eat, we need connection with each other. So those are all even other little yards that sometimes we don't think about, but they can be a baseline checking in with, like, have I eaten? Is that a part of what's, have I slept well? You know?
Good, good. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so good. Okay, so I always like to ask authors this question, but I am super interested, this is personally and selfishly, I want to know what your favorite part of this book is.
Oh, that's just such a fun question. one of the biggest gifts for me, it is hard to write. I'm not the only one to say this, right? It's warfare. But to get to offer in little snippets the ways God has met me in my own story has been such a gift, to say, like, here's really tangibly how God provided. And then I get to share that with you. So my dog Bella is a simple but really beautiful provision for me in the last 2 years that I got to write about. So there are four different headings in this book. There's Made for Connection. There's, now I'm forgetting my own. This is hilarious. Yeah. Connection secured, identity secured, and then I think connection enjoyed. And so for my last section, I got to write about Bella, who I adopted, learning to be a beloved pet. She did not know how to be a pet when she came to me. She'd been a breeding dog and had lived in a kennel her whole life. With me, I'm teaching her how to be my beloved pet. So she's learning to snuggle with me. She's learning to stay. She's learning to sit, to come when she's called, to enjoy life as a pet. And I really think that as the beloved sons and daughters of God, if there's sanctification, it is us learning to be the beloved sons and daughters. We're learning to be His children and learning to enjoy that. And so I looked back at this piece, that's just the intro that I read, and it really struck me, like, the gift that God gave me her. And then I got to kind of turn around and say, like, how am I learning? I'm in the process of learning to be his daughter. Like, what does it mean to be beloved, to receive from Him, to rely on Him, to lament and grieve and wrestle with God and struggle and be safe to struggle, but all being given actually a good design for life. He didn't just leave us with no instructions. He gave us this good world to live in and good instructions. Whereas the world would say, like, you're free from be free. You need all constraint, right? But like, Bella learns to live in my house and in my yard safely so she can thrive and flourish. And I really think this is the Christian story. It is in Christ a way we're learning to flourish, to actually become and be human. Mm-hmm. And it gets me excited to introduce kids to, like, hey, there are ways we're given for human flourishing. Like, here's what a human is and what a human is meant to be in Jesus. So writing about Bella, it was really sweet. You know,
I love it.
There's Narnia quotes in the thing and Harry Potter bits and, like,
oh,
the good
gosh.
Stuff too.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. All of it.
Getting to share some story.
That's so good. All right. So finish us off. What's the one thing that you hope people will get out of this book?
That's such a good question. I think I would say that our anxiety finds a secure home in the story of God. That our anxiety is actually invitation to connection, like I started off with, not something to just fear, to just fix, to just see as an enemy, but as we can learn to dance with it in the sense of like you were talking about, listening to it unto the bigger beauty we have in Jesus, who is our rest. He isn't just a source or a way to rest, but he is, that's day one of this is come to me, all ye who are weary and heavy laden, I will give you rest. He is our rest. And the mystery and beauty of that just, it captures my imagination and makes me wonder, because there's always more of Jesus to know, to learn about. So for us as adults too, we get to invite our kids to get to know Jesus more, always to be curious about who he is, to receive more of him. And in our anxiety, to get to come to him together with open hands, curious hearts, and then bodies we're going to engage. That just pumps me up.
I totally agree with you. Oh, this is so good. I mean, really, I encourage parents to gift this book to high school graduates, to people who are beginning high school, any kind of transition phase in their life. But also, I encourage parents to read this alongside your child, because I just think that this would be such a great way to start conversation and to really bring light to something. I think a lot of anxiety happens because we keep it hidden and we don't talk about it.
Yes.
But when we can bring it to the light, as with anything, you know, I think that that's where healing really starts to happen. And I think that this book, I would be interested. Okay, this is not part of your book, but I think it would be really cool for kids, adults, whoever, to start almost a symptom tracker. From day one, on a scale of 1 to 10, where is your anxiety? And then as you're going through this 31-day devotional book, how cool would it be to ask yourself on a daily, weekly basis, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I now? And how am I now? And how am I now? Because how cool to watch. The Lord is good. Mm-hmm. And he is going to meet us in that. And I'm not saying that this is just a quick fix and, you know, life is going to be happy and merry, but I do believe that the Lord is faithful to us, and that when we are willing to pour into his word and really frame the context of our worries in his light, then he is going to meet us there. You know,
I love that, Alice. I think you can even, I'm a big fan of the check-in just to give yourself a sense of what's happening, even at the beginning before you do it, of 0 being neutral to 10 being the most anxious you've felt, to like do it at the beginning before you do your devotional and then check in at the end. Why not?
That's awesome. Yeah.
I totally love that idea.
That's so good. Well, Liz, I'm so proud of you personally. Aww. I just think you have really hit this one out of the ballpark. I'm super grateful for you, and I am thankful for your time. I know that you're so busy. So just
thank
the
you,
fact
sweet
that you
Alice.
Would sit down and you know, have this conversation with me, I'm so excited. Your book launches in June, so you should be able to go in and get it, you know, and go to Amazon, go really think about the kids in your life who could benefit from this book. I highly recommend it. I think it's a great resource to come back to. And I do think that you'll come back to it in different seasons of your life, or, you know, month after month, just start it over again, especially if this is something that you're dealing with on a regular basis. So Liz, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Alice. It's always a joy to be with you.
Same here. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Ask Alice.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Ask Alice with Alice Chernock. If you found this podcast helpful or encouraging, we'd appreciate your help in bringing this grace-filled, gospel-centered, Bible-saturated content to others who might also benefit. Help us serve others by sharing this resource on social media, by leaving 5-star feedback, or simply by subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more grace-filled, gospel-centered, Bible-saturated resources, be sure to visit www.rootedministry.com. As always, special thanks to High Street Hymns for the music on this podcast. This podcast is made available to you by the Rooted Ministry for educational purposes only, not to provide specific therapeutic advice. The views expressed are the personal perspectives of the author and do not represent the views of all counselors or of the counseling profession. This podcast does not create a counselor-client relationship and should not be used as a substitute for competent therapeutic counsel from a licensed professional in your state.
If you love the conversations we're having here on this podcast, we hope you'll join us in person this November at the Rooted 2023 conference in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a full 3 days of a family-like setting where you'll worship, fellowship, and be equipped and encouraged for another year of ministry. We'll have main session speakers including Daniel Yang, Trillia Newbell, and Kelly Capick. 20 fantastic workshops from pastors, theologians, counselors like Mike McGarry and Sissy Goff, and music led by Sandra McCracken, the Lipscomb University Gospel Choir, and more. Join us today at rootedministry.com/conference or click the link in the show notes. Don't forget to sign up before June 15th before prices increase. Again, that's rootedministry.com/conference.